The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Sometimes people will recognize that one of these five hindrances is operating for them, and they will take it as evidence of a personal failing. And how terrible I am. I have desire. Oh, I'm such an awful person. Can't believe it. I have this ill will. And it's often said that the hindrances just come with being a human being. And that it's not necessarily something to take personally, like to personally fall, just comes with being a human. And all humans have to deal with them. And it's something very maturing about addressing them, looking at them and seeing them, and not being so worried about their presence, don't be upset by their presence, but take them as the food and the fuel and the stuff where we find the path, where we kind of develop ourselves and cultivate our practice. And so that, you know, desire just operates, and then we get swept up in its world. So that's frequently said. And but there's really two sides, I think, to our involvement with the hindrances. One is that it's just a kind of a, you could say, kind of an innate capacity to have these operate. And they bubble up, and we have to deal with them. But then also what we frequently think about, are concerned with, becomes the inclination of the mind, becomes a habit, becomes a disposition. And so, whereas some of it is just spontaneous, what we're born with, what we come into this world with, if we keep acting on it or keep reinforcing any one of these, then, or we act on it and get into it and indulge in it, then it's not necessarily anymore just the natural arising. It's something where we've chosen to be involved in and stay connected to, and then that reinforces it. And I've seen this in myself, that if I pursue certain kinds of things, certain desires, that I'm left with lingering, kind of wanting more, wanting desire. It's not just, I'm not just free of it. And there's a kind of a momentum that gets it going. And that sometimes with desire, the momentum of wanting, well, I've noticed that when I stopped wanting that particular thing, that the momentum is still there. And the momentum of desire feels uncomfortable. And that discomfort begs to be filled with the object of desire. And so off I run. I don't go running that much, but, off for the neck, try to fill it. And then that reinforces it. Kind of. And it has a huge consequence. Even when it's not very strong, the hindrance, by acting on it or allowing it to kind of course through us and have its say on us, any one of the hindrances, I think we get a little bit disconnected from ourselves. And it's, I think, most clearly seen with desire and ill will, that if you're running off into desire and ill will, you're running off after an object, something else that you want, rather than being intimate and connected to what's happening here. So, for example, if what you want is a person, sensual desire relates to the person, that's the person out there you're concerned with. You think about how wonderful it would be. But you don't really notice what's going on here. Or the same thing with anger. If you're angry at a person, you're focusing on the person, and you might not notice what's going on inside of you. And with both desire and ill will, there's a cost for us here. And so it's very interesting to look at the cost of being caught up in the world of sensual desire, choosing to go with it or allow it to go, keep going. And so one immediate one is, I think there's a disconnect with ourselves. We don't see ourselves very well. We don't in touch with ourselves. And that disconnect, that alienation, feels uncomfortable. And it tends to be fuel for further involvement with the hindrances. It also, but then we're more likely to act on it. If we're not connected well in ourselves, we don't know ourselves that well, it's much easier to go on automatic pilot on these different things that come along and be swept away in them. And sensual desire, there's no shortage of human beings who have caused suffering to themselves and others through the pursuit of sensual desire. If you have never done that at all, probably you don't need to be here. And it just comes, it's just such an intimate part of human life, the struggles and the pursuit of this kind of particular kinds of desires. So it's a way of causing harm. And some people have ruined their lives in the pursuit of sensual pleasure or in acting on, indulging in, or involved in ill will, hostility. So from, subtle disconnect with ourselves to dramatic and almost losing our lives through the kind of pursuit of these things, there's a whole range in between. Our community can be disrupted, families can be disrupted, a whole country can be disrupted when presidents pursue sensual pleasure in the wrong way. The whole country can be disrupted when the president acts on ill will. So it'd be a huge consequence of how it ripples out. I think it's quite phenomenal that Buddhism encourages us to really stop and take a look at this stuff and try to understand it really well. And hopefully, in kind of a non-judgmental way. There is a judgment in Buddhism that it's better not to operate caught in the grip of sensual desire or ill will. So there's clearly a judgment, clearly an evaluation. This is not useful to be caught in the grip of it. And the other, that's the judgmental side. The non-judgmental side is the side of not being reactive, not being in conflict with the arising of this stuff, and rather, in a very generous way, stopping and looking at it, getting to know it well. So that's what we're doing here. Last thing I'd like to say is that different times in a person's life, different days, different weeks, different phases, and also for different personalities, different ones of these five hindrances predominate. So there are times when desire predominates. Some people are more desire-type people. Some people are more ill-will-type people, aversive-type people. So for example, for me, I'm more desire-type. I'd like to have. The ill will is not so strong for me, but having things, is good. I say sometimes that I can have, desires are a dime a dozen for me. So I've learned over the years to recognize the function, the operation of desire, and for the most part, these desires can kind of come and go. They're cheap, and I don't get tricked by them as much as I used to. And some people are more aversive, and that's their thing, for whatever reason, the thing they're into. And then sometimes people are more the sloth and torpor type. Some people are more the aversive type. The restless anxiety type. And then some people, doubt is big. Some people are very filled with doubt. So which one are you? Or today, or this phase of your life, or this lifetime, what tends to predominate for you? Which operates of these five? What would you say is your strong suit? Is it desire, sensual desire, Is it aversion or ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety, or doubt? That's what I'd like you to reflect on a little bit. And maybe it's popped up. The answer is obvious. Maybe you need to reflect on it a little bit. So you have 15 minutes to place yourself in one of these categories.
Just one.
Well, some people feel like they equally fit in all of them. The multiple hindrance personality. And I think it's fair to say, that all the hindrances operate in some way. But if you can, choose one for yourself. The one that seems to be the strongest or the juiciest or Or just the one you'd prefer, if you can't decide anything at all, just the one you prefer to be. if they're all equal. Yes?
With something like thirst or pain in the leg, would that be desire for sensual comfort or aversion to discomfort?
If you have physical pain, so in that case, for some people, their mind gets caught up in aversion. And that's their aversion. I know someone who had knee pain, and he would push back on his knee to hurt it back until he had knee surgery. So that's aversion was operating. Someone else might be sitting here feeling knee pain, and their mind goes thinking about designing the most perfect meditation cushion and how it's going to feel, just the right texture, and you can velvet, and just kind of, it's more, desire. Wow, yes, if they get the heat going in here, my muscles will relax, and it feels so soothing. And the aversion is not a big thing. It's just like how good it would feel. That's where the mind goes. So different people, different times, different ways it goes. Okay? Or it might just be, I don't know what to do with this pain. I don't know what to do. What should I do? Should I move? Should I not move? He didn't give any instructions around pain. He told me to pay attention to distractions, but pain is not one of the five hindrances. I'm distracted by it. What am I supposed to do now? I'm confused. That's maybe the doubt operating. Or it could be if you have pain sitting here and something's wrong. That's not right. I can't do the exercise properly. What should I do? And, hope no one notices. And you get well worked up. Or it could be that you feel a knee pain and, oh no, not again. I was so excited, looking forward to this day here. Oh, and I'm just ready to give up. It's so hard, I'm pain again. So that's maybe sloth and torpor setting in. Or you sit here and pain. Oh, look, pain is happening. Pain. That's interesting. Feels like pulling and tightening and heat. And none of the hindrances are operating at all. So, any other questions? Any help? Yes.
Fear sort of falls underneath aversion or anxiety.
Yes.
So that confuses me as to which it is.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it always seems strange to many people that they have this wonderful list of five and fear isn't in it, because some people fear is the primary hindrance. It operates so pervasively. One explanation why it's not there is the one I gave earlier, that fear wouldn't be operating when you're really well settled in meditation, whereas these others might. That's one interpretation. Another one is that some people will put fear under the category of aversion. And someone else I know likes putting it under the category of restlessness and anxiety. That's where they say it fits. So I don't have the real answer for you, like the definitive answer. Just who knows, And you're welcome to have six hindrances and include fear as part of it. That's okay. There's no limitation how many you can have. Yes. I have aversion to my knee pain.
What?
I can have aversion to my knee pain.
Right. I'm saying that fear. Like if I'm, I'm afraid my knee, my knee.
Oh, it's always imaginary.
Yeah, it's still aversion. It's something I don't want. Fear is always something I don't want.
Teacher I know who likes to put fear under the category of restlessness and anxiety, wants to limit the second hindrance to ill will. And not even he doesn't want to even include anger as part of it, because not all anger he says is strong displeasure. So anyway, for him, the ill will, fear doesn't fit very well into the ill will. Other teachers it fits really well, because fear has to do with a certain kind of resistance, pushing things away or not wanting something. So
he puts strong displeasure under what?
He defines anger as strong displeasure. It doesn't necessarily include ill will. Strong displeasure?
Yeah.
Under strong displeasure. Well, you know, the question is, one of the issues with the hindrances is in the suttas, there's a relatively narrow kind of category. Each one is kind of narrow. The first one is sensual desire. But a lot of teachers find it useful to expand it out, or people, practitioners, expand it out to include all desire, because it's almost any desire can trip you up. And so why just limit it to just a sensual desire? And then the word for the second hindrance is ill will. And however, all kinds of other forms of aversion or anger can arise. That they don't necessarily have hostility as part of it. Ill will, it feels like you want ill for someone. But the anger doesn't necessarily want ill for someone. Or aversion doesn't necessarily want ill for someone or something. And so, but some people like to broaden and include any kind of aversion because it's such a big thing in our life. So I'm quite content, happy to make it quite broad and very inclusive, this, because I think it's more useful at this point to think of it that way. Yes?
When I look at fear or other things, what came up for me a lot was restlessness, anxiety, and worry. It seems to be generated by doubt, by uncertainty, confusion, and so on. And so then I go there to these other places from that doubt.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So there's one difference between the doubt or the uncertainty might not be distracting per se, but it's the catalyst for getting involved in distraction. One way of thinking of the hindrances is there are five strategies for dealing with challenges. Five unhealthy strategies for dealing with challenges. When we feel something uncomfortable, some difficulty, sometimes different people have different strategies for responding. Some people will go, they want something. Some people want something to go away. Some people just give up. Some people run around anxiously. And some people just have a lot of uncertainty what to do. So some people choose different strategies for how to respond. Yes?
Yeah, that's helpful. And helping people. I sort of a difficulty I've always had in trying to work with the hindrances is that none of them ever, except for doubt actually, seem to get to the root of what's going on. And so, like in my sit this morning, I noticed a lot of restlessness, but if I just sit there and notice restlessness and don't notice, or I'm worrying about all these things because I want people to like me. And then when I notice, oh, I just want people to like me, then everything settles down. Then I've noticed the truth of my experience. But if I just stay at the level of restlessness, or really any of the others, I feel like I don't really get to enough to the root of it to have that settling feeling.
Exactly. So that's why we want to stop and look more deeply and see what's really going on here. And sometimes these hindrances don't have necessarily a deep root, but sometimes they clearly have a root or a catalyst, usually a discomfort, that we're trying to cope with that discomfort and do something with it. The word that we, the Pali word that we translate as hindrance, the word is nivarana. It should not be confused with nirvana. Nivarana. According to the dictionary, it means to cover over, to cover up, to put a cover on something. Hindrance has the idea of obstructing, but cover has the idea of hiding. And so I find it useful sometimes to investigate what is a hindrance covering. Sometimes desire covers loneliness, for example. And sometimes ill will or aversion covers frustrated desire. You know, so it's interesting to explore this and unpack it a little bit. Do you have enough to put yourself in a category, or you think that's what I want to do now, so we can?
I'm still confused.
Okay.
It's like they're crossing over all the time.
Crossing over?
Well, it's like fear of being in any categories, or you know, just different things from being in any categories depending on the
interpretation of this. Maybe. The first two hindrances have to do with your relationship to an object. So either you want the object or you want it to go away. Okay, pull, push. So two different directions. So, you know, I want lunch. Or, you know, not another peanut butter sandwich. You know, so there's a version. And then the third and fourth hindrance have much more to do with our subjective state in relationship to challenges of what's going on. We can either have a drop of energy or we can have a spike in energy. A drop takes the form of sloth and torpor, restlessness, or a spike, it becomes, you know, restless or agitated or kind of something. So the first two have to do more with the object that we're interested in. The second two have much more to do with subjective state, energetic state. And the fifth one has to do with itself, doubt. So, good enough for now? We're going to spend a whole year on this. I just want to give you a very general, just general, these categories and see if you can, do you think you have enough to put yourself in one for now? For today, just this last meditation or today or this lifetime, that which which one of these five, you know, kind of is... They'll get their chance. But which of these choose one that kind of more or less characterizes you, if whatever time span you want, whether it's today, this morning, this second, but kind of put ideally it's something more like, oh yeah, this I recognize this. This is a really familiar thing. And in fact, yes, this particular one seems to be the more one that comes more frequently through.
Thinking about the mind as one of the senses, and I want this mind to be ordered and beautiful rather than chaotic feeling.
That could well be. I don't think it's, you know, we can make hard and fast distinctions or barriers between some of these hindrances. They often come up together in different ways. So that's part of your task, is to see the different threads that are operating here with it. Okay, so what I was hoping to do was we would take a silent break for 15 minutes. And those of you who haven't put yourself in a category yet, would you please do so? And also, it might be useful for what's going to happen next for you to choose your number two. So which of the hindrances is more predominant for you, the most predominant? And which is the second most predominant? For what we're going to do next, it would be useful to have more options. And if you have a real hard time, you know, choosing because they're all equal or some of them are equal, then just choose the one that you like to be in. Or if you're an aversion type person, then choose based on which one you don't want to be. Okay, so let's take the break. Thank you.